Audacity. Attitude. Government contracted firm embroiled in $1 million vaccine scam. That and other developments in this edition of the Caribbean News Roundup coming right up. A government minister in Bridgetown says Barbadians have no reason to be concerned about how their tax dollars are being used by the government for purchases or deals brokered for the benefit of the country. That response was prompted by reports that Barbados has been caught up in a COVID-19 scam. The matter is said to be in court in Florida, in which the 300,000 citizens of Barbados are cited to be at the core of the case in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic and efforts to secure vaccines. While not mentioning the matter by name, the Barbados government had this response as carried by Barbados Today.
The assurance of Minister in the Ministry of Finance, Ryan Strachan, following news that a local company procuring COVID-19 vaccines on behalf of government was allegedly defrauded of over $10 million US dollars.
I can assure you in the public of Barbados that no monies were transferred from the Treasury or from the government to any particular entity in respect of that, simply because obviously, as we recognize, the access to vaccines obviously has been a challenge for the government, even trying to procure directly from the manufacturers themselves. So we took a simple position. Once persons are able to acquire those vaccines and they arrive in Barbados and the drug service is able to validate that they are a legitimate product, then we would engage in order to ensure then that that persons would be able to actually access those vaccines. This particular circumstance, I think, is a lesson for anybody who wants to do business, and therefore in the context of what we have said, every time that we have had an opportunity where people reach out to us for to do certain things, we have done the appropriate due diligence to make sure that before the government of Barbados gets into any particular arrangement, that obviously that we follow that due diligence. So as I said, all I can say is that it is a real lesson for all of us, and I do hope that they're able to get their matter resolved and that they can get whatever monies that they have expended back to them as quickly as possible.
Now, to better understand what has happened, we turn to St. Lucia and MBC Prime News with a report under the caption, Government Contracted Firm Embroiled in $1 million Vaccine Scam. The Castries Media House, in its report, says businessman Mark Maloney, an official representing Radical Investments Limited, is seeking damages from 7 different companies in the United States. These companies are being accused of losing millions in taxpayer dollars from a COVID vaccine procurement deal gone awry. Let's hear from NBC's Rihanna Isidore.
Now in April, during the initial stages of the global race for COVID vaccines, ex-Prime Minister Alan Chesney gave Radical Investments a direct award valued at $7.3 million to buy AstraZeneca vaccines on St. Lucia's behalf. But St. Lucia already had an arrangement with COVAX, who had already committed tens of thousands of vaccine doses to the island at minimal cost. Mark Maloney and Radical Investments were also engaged by the Barbados government. Barbados's Mia Motley administration also allocated more than $10 million to Radical Investments for AstraZeneca vaccines. NBC Prime obtained court documents filed on September 17th in Florida's Southern District that indicate Maloney was introduced to officials representing a company called Good Vibrations by a Trinidad businesswoman in Florida. According to the lawsuit, Good Vibrations claimed to have the capabilities to source the vaccines for Maloney's company. Radical Investments entered an agreement with Good Vibrations and agreed to pay the company $12 million. After paying Good Vibrations more than $6.6 million without receiving a single COVID vaccine dose, Maloney grew suspicious. His subsequent inquiries into Good Vibrations and its associates revealed a more sinister plot was at play. Mark Maloney and Radical Investments are now suing in a Florida court to recoup the millions lost in what appears to be an elaborately fraudulent COVID vaccine scheme. So were St. Lucian taxpayers caught up in the scandal? On August 31st, newly minted Prime Minister Philip J. Pierre revealed the government was still unsuccessful in retrieving its $7.3 million issued to Radical Investments.
But talking about vaccines, we're talking about vaccines. Do you know that the last government paid by handwritten check $7 million for the importation of vaccines into St. Lucia? And do you know, Mr. Speaker, on the 13th of July, because they were so uncertain of what they had done, they were not firm in the conviction that what they did was right. They canceled the order on the 14th of July. They canceled the order for the vaccines that they had imported. And then up to today, we cannot get our money back.
The Barbados Today news outlet on September 22nd published an interview with Mr. Chastney addressing the emerging vaccine scandal. The former Prime Minister told Barbados Today, quote, due diligence was done, end quote, adding that the St. Lucia government's deal with Radical Investments was similar to that of African groups. Mr. Chastney also told Barbados Today Radical Investments was reputable, which was a key factor in his decision to proceed with that arrangement.
We need the $7 million to help in the increase in testing. We need the $7 million to improve the respiratory hospital.
Workers in Antigua and Barbuda's public sector are being warned that they could be replaced by October 1st if they remain unvaccinated. These workers are being told that their temporary relief from work could become permanent. Prime Minister Gaston Brown addressed the issue in Parliament on Thursday.
And now that we have decided to act as a responsible employer to ensure that there is a safe work environment in the interest of all, public servants have the gumption to be threatening us and challenging us, really? And then some of them telling us that they're going to withdraw their labor? Well, guess what? The cabinet has already taken a position. Well, fine, you withdraw your labor, we're going to put somebody else in your position. And sometimes, and it's not a threat, but sometimes temporary becomes permanent. But what we do know, we will not allow any employee or any group of employers to hold this country hostage. So we have to act now in the public interest to achieve herd immunity before the end of this year. And I am satisfied that Antigua and Barbuda can achieve herd immunity before the end of this year. From all indications, by the end of today, we will have at least 50% of the population that would have had a first vaccination. And I think that's a great achievement. So, in as much as these mandates are designed to encourage people to do the right thing, we must also celebrate the fact, too, that people are now going out in their droves to get vaccinated.
Meanwhile, the Antigua and Barbuda Public Service Association says it hopes the government will consider its decision to mandate that all public service workers should be vaccinated. The union is concerned that thousands of government workers will be displaced as a result of the policy and has filed a petition in the court for judicial review. The head of the United Independence Congress of Jamaica, UIC, Joseph Patterson, was arrested on Wednesday for multiple breaches of the Disaster Risk Management Act. Patterson was placed in handcuffs and taken away by the police. The leader of the country's third political party's arrest came as he prepared to lead a group of anti-COVID protocol protesters. TVG News had this report on the confrontation between police and protesters.
The march, a continuation of a series of gatherings in several parishes, was planned days in advance. The police issued warnings, including on social media, that any such gathering would be illegal. On Tuesday, a defiant Patterson issued this statement.
I can assure you that tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., I will be present at Ward Theatre for our march on Garden House.
And so Wednesday morning, in the midst of a crowd of followers, he and five others were taken into custody for, among other things, organizing a group of more than 10 persons, which breaches the Disaster Risk Management Act.
The other offense that we have arrested them for is under reasonable suspicion of carrying out the act of disrupting the activities of Parliament as uttered by the leader, Mr. Pattison, in my presence, after warning him about the offences that they are going to march on Parliament and to disrupt the activities there.
But after his arrest, things got disruptive quickly. The crowd followed the arrested Mr. Pattison to the Central Kingston Police Station, demanding his release and insisting their gathering was legal and justified. Their reluctance to go back several meters from the station resulted in pushing and shoving, the cops doubling down with pepper spray and a SWAT team.
We need a curfew to stop. We need a lockdown to stop, because it not benefit nobody. Nobody but the private sector, nobody but the government. Seeing so they ship them come in, and them lock all of the tourists them from people. So we need all of that to stop right now.
They started using their sticks and they started using brute force. When I seen them push an old lady, I said that's wrong and it's morally wrong. We're obeying what you guys are saying. Then they come out with the pepper spray and they pepper spray all of us.
We're out here in our numbers in support of freedom of choice. Mr. Pattison is demanding freedom, and we are saying no to mandatory vaccination. It should not be a case where it's take a job or lose your job.
The U.S. envoy for Haiti resigns, citing inhumane deportations. In his resignation letter, Daniel Foote offered his apologies to those affected by his country's recent round of deportations. Foote resigned from his position on Wednesday over his country's treatment of Haitian refugees. The move came just 2 months after his appointment. I will not be associated with the U.S. inhumane, counterproductive decision to deport thousands of Haitian refugees and illegal immigrants to Haiti, Foote wrote in his resignation letter to U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. The State Department said Foote's resignation was unfortunate and that he had mischaracterized circumstances. The Biden administration has come under fire from human rights organizations in recent days following the deportation of thousands of Haitian migrants. Foote said Haiti, a country plagued by corruption, gang violence, and poverty, could not deal with forced returns on this scale. The Haitian population simply cannot support the forced infusion of thousands of returned migrants lacking food, shelter, and money without additional avoidable human tragedy, he said. As many as 14,000 Haitians were at an encampment in Del Rio on the Texas border with Mexico, according to U.S. officials. Our policy approach to Haiti remains deeply flawed, and my recommendations have been ignored and dismissed, Foote said. Here is a DW report about the ongoing migrant problems involving the deportation of Haitians.
It was supposed to be a happy moment, a relief to finally cross the border of the United States. But after months, sometimes years on the road, a dream quickly turned into a nightmare for these migrants from Haiti. We were hungry. They didn't give us a blanket or a piece of cartonboard to lay on. We were cold and dirty and everything. Everything happened to me. But thanks to God, I have a little bit of hope that everything will be okay. Taken from the bridge, he was brought to a facility where he could finally shower, eat, and put on fresh clothes. Roberto Marquez is fighting the deportation of the thousands of migrants who came here last week.
The solution is to bring some business people and they'll take care of this problem in 5 minutes. What they will do is they give him work, because that's what they're looking for.
For President Joe Biden, this is another crisis that he needs to address immediately. After his controversial withdrawal from Afghanistan, leading to tens of thousands of Afghans to resettle in the United States. The border town Del Rio, with its 36,000 inhabitants, is in crisis mode. The bridge to Mexico is closed, border control, police and military is everywhere. The whole world seems to watch how the United States are going to handle the 14,000 refugees who crossed the Rio Grande in the last few days.
I think the only people that were caught by surprise were the politicians, you know, because the people on the ground, the citizens, you know, former Border Patrol agents and the current law enforcement here, they knew this was going to happen. Under President Trump, we had the Remain in Mexico policy. Trump put pressure on Mexico, the trade specifically. And so when Mexico had an incentive to cooperate and be a good neighbor, they helped us out. But Biden came in and took all that off the table, and this is what has happened.
After waiting all day long, a bus finally arrives to pick up those migrants who can afford a ticket and prove that they have family in the U.S. with whom they can stay. A glimmer of hope for some at a border where long journeys often come to a cruel end.
We end by celebrating long life. Dominica's 23 living centenarians were highlighted on Thursday as the Dominica Council on Aging held its inaugural Centenarians Day. The 23 comprise 17 females and 6 males. Topping the list, Dominica's oldest living centenarians, 107-year-old Elizabeth O'Gist, otherwise known as Ma Willie of Crayfish River, and Anastasia Mamagi Charles of Wesley. There are also two 106-year-olds, Mrs. Philomene Maddow Goodell and Oscar Popeye Joseph, popularly known as the original Ice Cream Man. The full complement of centenarians have for the week become celebrities, with their photos splashed in various media publications on the island. And that's the Caribbean News Roundup for today, Friday, September 24th. I'm Ken Richards. Thanks for listening.
The Caribbean News Roundup. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. At 7:30 a.m., 12:30 p.m., and 6 p.m. Let's get to know our region even better with OSAR Radio.